Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
And welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, as usual, via PodcastOne.com and iTunes. Thank you for downloading, streaming, listening, however you do it. It is greatly appreciated. Another great interview for you coming in just a few minutes here on this week's podcast with Lee Kerslake, a man who, well, if his name doesn't ring a bell, you'll want to know about him because you certainly, if you're a metal fan, have a record that he played on in your collection. And I'll explain that in a second. First, a quick little update here, as usual, at the top of the show about my recent activities. Just got back from Cruise to the Edge. I was on board last week, a progressive rock cruise that I broadcast my Sirius XM radio show from every day. I will openly admit I am not a huge prog guy. I respect it. I relate to it in the sense that the audience for prog, you know, and that music, they feel just as sort of, actually even more so, disrespected, I guess the word would be, by the mainstream and by radio and what have you, much like hard rock and metal fans often do. Although with progressive rock, I think it's even more of a shunning of that genre of music. And those guys, their fans, they really, really appreciate some coverage of their music, which I do on that cruise for 4 or 5 days. And it was fun to do. There are some bands that I saw that I liked, got turned on to. Others, not my thing. But that's okay. I mean, it's okay to say that, and that's what the exploration of music is all about. Certainly tremendous musicianship, which is a hallmark of progressive rock music, no doubt. But just in terms of, you know, what I like, you know, big choruses, great vocals, big loud guitar riffs, that sort of thing. It's, you know, this progressive rock takes you in a different direction. And there's a lot of variety under that umbrella of progressive rock. I mean, all sorts of artists perform on that. And that's why some of it I liked, obviously, more than other stuff. And in the coming weeks, and, you know, this might be a good thing to kind of gauge your interest in. You guys that listen to this podcast, hit me with an email if you want. Email address is eddie@eddietrunk.com. I interviewed a lot of iconic progressive rock artists on that show. If you listen to my Sirius XM show volume every day, you heard me broadcast from the cruise. And I'd be curious, you know, because I know my base is predominantly hard rock, but I'd be curious how many of you would like to hear some of those interviews here on the podcast. As I tell you guys week in and week out, this podcast is only a tiny sampling of what I do on a daily basis on my Sirius XM show every day, live 2 to 4 Eastern on 106 volume. So I cannot post everything here that I do every day there. It doesn't, the math doesn't work. A 1 day a week podcast versus a 5 day a week live radio show. So I cherry pick some stuff. And I mean, I interviewed Steve Howe from Yes, Steve Hackett, formerly of Genesis, Michael Sadler of Saga, Jordan Rudess of Dream Theater, Mike Portnoy, Billy Sherwood of Yes, Tony McAlpine, all sorts of artists. I'm probably forgetting a few in there as well. So if any of that stuff sounds like it's really something you'd like to hear on the podcast and you don't have Sirius XM or you live outside of the U.S. and Canada where you can't get Sirius XM, because if you have Sirius XM, you can go to the app and listen to any of these things now on demand. But I'll probably do the Steve Howe interview because, I mean, that guy's an icon of guitar players. Portnoy's on with me all the time. So, I mean, we'll maybe do some stuff with him. Jordan Rudess was a great conversation. McAlpine, I don't know. We'll see what I pick off from that. And maybe if you guys have some requests, I'll try to do that. If you didn't get to hear those shows, or again, you don't have Sirius XM, and you're out, especially if you're outside the U.S. and Canada, because if you're in the U.S. and Canada, you should get Sirius XM. So you can hear me live every day or hear these things on demand and every single thing that I do, because the interviews here on this podcast are just a little cherry picking of that. So it was great to be on the cruise, great to get away from the cold weather. And now I am, at the time you're hearing this, in Tulsa, where I just hosted a show with Saxon at the IDL Ballroom, and I'll be seeing them on the Monsters of Rock cruise, which kicks off a week from Sunday. So I have two cruises in February, and that'll be coming up very, very soon. But hosting a Saxon show in Tulsa, some other stuff I'm taking care of there, where I go so often with so many different things that I do there. And then I'll have a week off and then get on the Monsters of Rock cruise. And unlike Cruise to the Edge, the Monsters of Rock cruise is 100% a direct hit for my world of rock, and I know the bulk of my listening audience. So I urge you to check in and listen to that, because I will be broadcasting every day from the cruise, just like I did for Cruise to the Edge, with Monsters of Rock guests. And some of the bands on board include Tesla and Skid Row and Tom Kiefer and literally about 45 other bands. In addition to doing my daily radio show from Monsters, I'll also shoot an episode of Trunk Fest on it and host that cruise. I've hosted every one since it started. This is the 9th one for Monsters of Rock. So tons going on as usual. As usual, I ask you to follow me on Twitter at Eddie Trunk for the most up-to-the-second news, info, and updates. EddieTrunk.com is the website. And there's also an Instagram at Eddie Trunk and a fan page on Facebook. Few other things. The Grammys, what can I tell you? An utter joke. Continuing to be blatantly clueless and disrespectful as ever when it comes to rock music, not even televising those categories. The only thing remotely rock in the entire broadcast was the appearance of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who only ended up showing up on the show because, of course, Post Malone requested them. Post Malone is now the rapper who likes rock, who is going to get crowbarred in with a rock band every time he plays because he's become that guy. Whatever you think of him, thank God he is, because it's the only way we're getting anything to do with rock on any of these shows. The Grammys are and continue to be a lost, clueless disgrace ever since they gave Jethro Tull the award over Metallica and showed their blatant cluelessness. Nothing has changed. The nominations are utterly random, and now they don't even televise the categories. It is a pop music train wreck. It's ridiculous. It is utterly ridiculous. And lip syncing gone wild, folks. I talk about it all the time. Jennifer Lopez actually did a Motown tribute, some of the greatest vocals ever recorded, and clearly was lip syncing during it. We have lost, the world has lost their minds with what people are being sold and duped into and paying for. I'm getting an email a day with links blatantly showing Kiss lip-syncing on their farewell tour. Blatantly being caught off mic with vocals coming out of the PA every day. Now, if you guys are fine with this, then literally you're fine with anything. If you are fine with going to see bands or artists and paying your hard-earned money to see performances live, which is what you're supposed to be paying for, and hearing a computer or a track, go have fun and enjoy it. It's a joke. It is a joke. It's rampant. It has been rampant in pop music forever. We saw it in the Grammys. It was when it happened initially in pop music, think about Ashley Simpson, Saturday Night Live and all that. It was a huge scandal. Now, it's fine. Let me just go pay $2,000 to go see a band and hear a track. Everybody's going to sound great every night, right? Where is the variable in that? Where is the live in that? Where is the excitement in that? It is a joke. What some artists are doing is a joke. when it comes to presenting a quote-unquote live experience. It's ridiculous. And I've said this on my volume show, and I'll say it here. If it continues and people continue to look the other way and people continue to accept artists not really playing or singing live on stage and literally playing karaoke, I'm going to start a band. And I am not kidding about this, because I don't know how to sing or play an instrument. But if people are willing to pay money and look the other way and pretend it's not happening and spend hard-earned money to watch someone sing karaoke or perform karaoke, which is what it's come down to for some of these people, I'm going to put a band together. Eddie and the Tracks. Give me $50 and I'll lip sync my ass off for you guys. And guess what? I'm going to sound great every night. I'm never going to sound different any other night. If you've been listening to me on volume for the last couple of years, this has been a huge soapbox issue for me. It's not just because of Kiss getting snagged on it every night. It's not just because of what we saw in the Grammys. It is rampant. And it is just accepted and commonplace in rock, in pop music, when it wasn't. And we're going down that road in rock, and that cannot happen. Do you know how many artists I hear from every single day who actually are playing live and are disgusted and pissed off to share bills and see other bands and hear from fans about how great those bands sound, because those fans don't realize they're listening to a computer? Imagine if you had a band and you put the hard work and effort and energy into sounding great and rehearsed your vocals and got extra musicians if needed and put all this work into sounding great. And then you're in a festival and the band comes on after you with three or four members and sounds like the record, spot on, because they're running tracks. How would you feel? You're sitting there putting in all the work and you're seeing bands around you literally cheat. It's incredible. And it's happening like crazy. And ever since I've been on this soapbox about this, I can't tell you how many bands who really do sing and perform for real have reached out to me and said thank you, and how many crew people have said, you're 100% right. I work for this band. I work for that band. They run computers like crazy when they play. It's ridiculous to be happening in rock. But my God, for Jennifer Lopez to stand up there with Smokey Robinson, he must have been like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, that's outside of my scope of music, and my phone blew up about people saying she's clearly singing to a track. What is wrong with people today with the exorbitant ticket prices and all the entertainment options that people are willing to accept anything? They go to shows, they don't know who's in the lineup. They don't care who's in the lineup. They don't know who's in the band on any given week. They don't know if the band's actually playing live or not. It is the Wild West out there. It's utterly ridiculous. Do your homework. Support the bands that really do it live. Queen, on their last tour, actually posted a video because their backing vocals sounded so great, people accused them of running a track. So they sent out a video of their vocal warm-up saying, yes, folks, it's real. Def Leppard has defended the fact that they actually put the work in, that it's real, countless times. I saw Tommy Shaw from Styx stand on stage and say, we're proud of the fact that everything that comes off of this stage is real. The reason why this is happening is because the guys that are doing the real work to truly sound great are sick of it. And I can't blame them at all. All right. Today, the podcast interview, Lee Kerslake. The reason why I said before you may not know Lee as being a household name, because Lee's not. Lee Kerslake was the drummer most of his career in Uriah Heep. What Lee Kerslake is best known for, however, is having been the drummer on the first two Ozzy Osbourne albums, Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman. That rhythm section, Lee Kerslake and Bob Daisley, Lee played all the drums on those first two records, Over the Mountain, Flying High Again, of course, Crazy Train, all of it. That's Lee Kerslake on drums. Lee Kerslake made news recently when he announced he was terminally ill and that all he hoped for before he passed away was to be able to get platinum records for the first two Ozzy records, which he never had before. That was stunning to people to find out. And look, we all know Ozzy Sharon have had their issues and lawsuits with Kerslake and Daisley over credits, royalties, and all that. We know that, right? But people were stunned when Lee Kerslake revealed that he did not have platinum records for albums he was a huge part of. Well, that has since been corrected, and Ozzy sent platinum records to Lee, who is dying, unfortunately. And Lee Kerslake, a few weeks ago when I was at NAMM, was brought to an awards event that I host called the Hall of Heavy Metal History. And while there, Lee visited my radio show. It was the first time I ever met the man, and I was incredibly moved by him. This is a guy who is battling cancer, who has been given months to live, and has an unbelievable spirit about him. And I spent time with Lee Kerslake and saw him more than what you just hear in this interview. Throughout the rest of the week, I would often run into him in the hotel, and he would give me a hug and say hello and say how thankful he was that I had him on my show. A wonderful man with a spirit and disposition you cannot believe for a guy battling what he is battling and the diagnosis he has. And the last day I saw him when he left to go back to England where he lives, I said, Lee, I hope this isn't the last time we meet. Best of luck to you, and let's do another interview when you beat cancer's ass. And I truly hope that happens, because he really was a special guy with an incredible, incredible warmth about him and appreciation for life going through what he's going through. So I was thrilled to have the time with him that we have and that you will hear on this interview. I wish him nothing but the best going forward. You will get a sense of what this guy is like. And it's very uplifting. It's amazing. I was concerned, you know, going in an interview, talking to a guy who was terminally ill, you know, what was he going to be like? I mean, you hear it for yourself. He was amazing. We talk about the Ozzy records. We talk about Randy Rhoads. We talk about Uriah Heep. Really, really, really very, very moving stuff, I think. So I hope you really enjoy this. Lee Kerslake of Ozzy Osbourne fame telling his story. And let's certainly hope this isn't the last opportunity we get to hear from him. I want to thank Ace Trump for helping me set this up, as well as Pat Gesualdo, who had me host the Hall of Heavy Metal Awards and brought Lee over from England to be honored, which is a really classy move. Again, when you consider what Lee is going through and what he is battling and his health issues. So let's get to it in just a second here. This is really special. I think you're going to love it. Lee Kerslake, Uriah Heep, Ozzy Osbourne, just a couple weeks ago from NAMM. Like all my interviews originating from my SiriusXM show, Trunk Nation, heard on Volume Daily, channel 106. Live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 Eastern, replaying 9 to 11 Eastern. And if you have SiriusXM, listen on demand as well on the app. We'll come back in a second and talk to Lee Kerslake.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions, and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out. And you guys can look at over together. You can ask questions. You get the answers you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trading your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
Celebrity Big Brother is back, and we've got recaps of every single episode here on Rob as a Podcast. So whether you watch for the epic blindsides or for the insanity like Ricky Williams giving a colon massage to a constipated Kato Kaelin, yes, that happened. Check out our Celebrity Big Brother coverage on Rob as a Podcast on Apple Podcasts, podcast1.com, or the Podcast One app.
Hey, if you like my show, you're going to love John Taffer, No Excuses, on Podcast One. The best-selling author and entrepreneur behind Bar Rescue is not taking anyone's nonsense, and he's telling it like it is. And this week, he's joined by president of the UFC, Dana White. Check out John Taffer, No Excuses, every Tuesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, let's get to it. This took place in Anaheim, California a few weeks ago, just before the start of NAMM. It is an honor and a privilege to talk to Lee Kerslake. Never interviewed him before. I think you will enjoy this conversation. Let's get into it now on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Good to meet you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Eddie. It's nice to be here.
So when did you, what brought you here, NAMM or the event tonight? Or because you live in England, right?
Yeah, I live in London, in Crystal Palace.
Uh-huh.
The event was that I was informed that I would be inducted into the Metal Hall of History by, I think, Pat.
Right.
You know, Pat Gazelles. And which was a wonderful honor. And he phoned me up and said, you know, I've inducted in your, we'd love to see you. And I just said, well, basically, I'm a pensioner now. I can't afford to fly or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my sickness, my illness, I have to fly first class.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, don't worry, we're paying for everything.
Yeah.
And that, I cried.
Yeah, he's a really generous guy. He really is.
I cried my eyes out.
Yeah. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he actually put up on the page for the event what they call a Kickstarter, or pledge, like donations from people to help you out to get here, which I'm sure a lot of people responded and helped out as well in terms of fans and stuff, too. So I think that was really – because at the time that all this happened, the story had – you had just started to make news when you spoke about the fact, which just shocked people – that you did not have platinum records for the first two Aussie records, which you've, of course, played on.
Yeah.
And I know that has been corrected, which I want to talk to you about. But before that, how did that initially come out? Like the story that you had never even gotten those awards. Was that an interview that someone had talked to you?
Well, no, basically what had happened, there was a kind of, I'm not speaking to you, Aussie and Sharon, and you're not speaking to me. Like a, what can you say, a tiff.
A standoff,
yeah,
if you will.
So it went through years and years. And I, at that particular time, I said, oh, what the hell with it. I'm back with the heap, and I'll carry on and do my thing and not worry. At least people know I was on it. And then that, I let it go. And then last year, I was told that I had about a year to live, which was a kick in the teeth, I must admit, but it is what it is. And I wanted to fulfill my bucket list. And one of them was, I wanted to get a couple of records, platinums, but on my bedroom wall, because every time I went to sleep, if I never woke up or I did wake up, I always saw them. And I looked and I'd be chuffed, happy to what I've done, satisfied that I did contribute quite a hell of a lot to his success. And so
you and Bob,
yeah. Oh, but I'm going to just
and
come
Randy,
into
course,
that.
Yeah,
and not only was it me; it was Bob Daisley and Randy, with his soul. And I thought nothing of it, but I wrote a letter deeply from my heart, to Ozzy, saying that I'm on. You know, I haven't got long. At the moment, I'm still fighting it, and we're still coming up with new ideas. I might add that as well to people that I won't quit. I'm still carry on trying to live.
Good, good.
And I lost my track because
you had written the letter to Ozzy,
and I sent it via my manager Steve Weltman, who's also one of my close friends. He gave it to Ozzy, and Ozzy replied with a lovely letter back to me, and two albums. Well, in fact, there are seven platinum albums, three in one and four in the other. On this, to do the dish.
Oh, because they're multiple times platinum.
Yes, they are. Right. Yeah. So I got them, and I was absolutely chuffed. That was one of my bucket list that I was proud. And he sent me a lovely letter, a really lovely letter, and I just buried the hatchet, and I sent a letter to Ozzy. Thank you, Ozzy. and a thank you to Sharon, and I gave him my love, and that's it. Done.
You know, I think that the biggest story, the biggest thing that came out of that, Lee, to a lot of people, and it's wonderful how it ended, which is very recent, what you just described happening. But I think the biggest takeaway in all that, and I know that everyone knows that there's been issues and drama and lawsuits and what have you between, you know, over the decades with yourself and Bob and that camp over royalties and publishing and credit and all that, and that still to someday at some point exists. But I think the biggest shock to a lot of fans was that you had never, after all these decades, you had never gotten, no one even thought of getting you those records, regardless of how much of a bad relationship it would have been. You would have thought that someone would have somehow, through some way, gotten tried you to those records.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that thought crossed my mind, but I soon threw it out because I thought, well, if it's gone this long with the problems we had with Ozzy and Sharon, the lawsuit that we lost, I thought, well, I'm not going to get them, so I'll forget about it. I'm not going to turn it into a hate factor because, you know, life's too short. And I don't believe in that. And now this has come about, that, am I honest? It's brought me to the head of saying, hey, let's try it one more time and just write a letter from my heart. I never thought of doing it. It was my manager said, why don't you put a letter together? And I put a letter with honesty. And I think it touched Ozzy and Sharon. And
well, how could it not? Especially in the, no matter what, you know, is said about them, and there's been a lot said about them.
Oh, yeah, of course. But you've got to remember that she's in a business where the minute you say the wrong thing, the barriers come up.
Right.
And she is a perfect example. It's like a huge wall. Sorry about this wall thing in America, but it's a huge wall comes up as soon as you say anything untoward her. And she said, that the hell with it. So you screw you and whatever.
So you had not had any sort of relationship or contact with Ozzy for decades, basically.
For decades.
Until just now.
Until about a month ago. Oh, well, that's a lie. I did a couple of times. Through my manager, we were sending it through her publishing company via my manager. Just a little note. Come on, can you get in touch with Sharon? Lee wants to speak with her. But she was always away and very, very busy, apparently. And so I waited to buy my time, and then Steve, my manager, said, put your letter together. And I did. And I told the truth, and I let it go. And it turned up, and I've got them. And then, to me, that bygones be bygones now. Water under the bridge. I think the world of Ozzy, I'll never say a bad thing, because he's a sick puppy as well. And she's got a bad comeuppance with her son. He's got a very nasty multiple sclerosis or something like that, I think. It's not fair, but he's got it. So they've got their problems, and I've got mine. So let's let it bygones be bygones. And
you can wake up every day and see those records on your wall, which is what
exactly.
You
and that means a $1 million to me. All the one honest thing, really honest to goodness, Eddie, I would have loved if she'd have turned up there tonight and said, "Surprise, surprise!" I would have broken down because that would mean a lot. Everything, that would be the coup de grace of everything. The bygones have gone. We have a lot of respect for each other. And she'd have done that for me. I'd have loved it. But she's very, very busy. So, I understand.
Do you, one of the things I think that is, and this came up the other day when you talk, and I want to talk about some other stuff in your career, of course, as well. But we talk about those first two Ozzy records, which, of course, were you, Bob, Randy, and Ozzy. The second record, you guys are not pictured on Diary.
No.
And Tommy Aldridge, who is pictured, has, I'm sure you're aware of this, when he has been done interviews with uneducated people who have talked about his playing on that record, he has always said that it's you.
Yeah,
you
know.
And I'm sure you've appreciated that over the years.
I've met him quite a few times, and we've chatted, and he's my friend.
Yeah.
He said, I'd never put you down, ever put me down. And then he said, I'd never, ever put you down or lie. And I knew he won't. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I know, he knows, and that's the end of it. But it was, what can you say? How can I say it? He took my place. So that was it. It was one of those things where she decided that he was going to be on the back of the cover, although me, Bob, and Randy played it. That's the way it was going to be.
Yeah, and that's not all that unusual. There are instances where that has happened, where people have been pictured that aren't actually on the record themselves. Yeah. What are your recollections on making those two records?
Brilliant memories, because I'll tell you the story, how it came about that I joined them.
I would love to know that.
Well, I just left Uriah Heep. I'd had a big argument with the management, because believe me, I'm not a lover of managers.
That sounds like the one you have now you're happy with, because he helped orchestrate the letter.
Yeah, because he's also, not only is he a manager, he's a friend.
Right.
And he worries about my health. My other manager didn't give a shit, as long as he's eating 50%.
Right.
But
50%. 50?
50% of everything we earned, he took.
Mike, that's a bad deal, Lee.
That was it. In our day, in the 70s, there's no statute of limitations. So Jerry Braun had the management, agency, record company. And that was a lot to own.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Our friend Ace is over here. He's a manager. You taking 50% on anybody, Ace?
The hell he is. He's one of the nice ones.
Of course he is.
You get lucky. I mean, I got lucky. Uriah got lucky with Ace. I got lucky with Steve Walton. You know, he also manages and Ken Hensley.
Uh-huh.
And he's had dealings with Genesis, was one of his bands in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just so honest, and that's why he's poor. That's why he's not a rich manager.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I digress. I was in Shepperton Studios doing my solo album. I decided I'm going to go solo, because I was
writing. Would be late 70s.
70, it was actually 1980.
Okay, because 80 is the year that Blizzard of Oz came out.
Yeah, but
so
I
around
joined.
The same time.
I was in the studios in January, and I got a phone call from Ozzy Hoppy, who now is the actual agent for Iron Maiden, but then he was working for Sharon and Ozzy. Phoned me up and said, Ozzy, and I've just found out that you're not working with Uriah Heep. You're free. And would you like to join a band Ozzy's put together with Sharon? And not Sharon, then it was Don Arden. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm so sick of managers and being treated like I'm a fifth person, you know, not a real member of a band. But I'll join if I like you, and you, and if you like me, we both agree. Mm-hmm. We're happy. So okay, well, we'll get it together. So I said, I'm down in Shepparton rehearsing and doing my album. He said, okay, we'll get you down at M Studios, which is the big studio. And then by the time I got there and set up the drum kit, and Brandy came in and Bob came in, set all the gear up with their roadies. Ozzy came in and he looked like Hugo the Bear. He had this immense, massive old fur coat that you would buy back in there in the 50s, you know, and he said, okay, right, I said, what would you do? And Randy said, what do you want to do, Lee? I said, I'll play I Don't Know and Crazy Train. Let's try them. Okay.
Lee was taking us into the studio and talking about how he got the drumming gig on the what was supposed to be, and Bob Daisley has said this many times, was originally positioned as a band called Blizzard of Oz.
Yes, it was. We both agreed. Me and Bob and Randy were very tight, all of us together, because basically we were the ones always in the studio, always committed and doing the drums, the bass, the guitars, the mixing, the production. We were always there, me and Bob especially. And so it was the magic, which it was a magic, make the no bones. There was an incredible magic between me, Randy, and Bob that was put into Ozzy, and it suited Ozzy like a glove. What we wrote and what we came up, the way we produced it, the way we made it,
It's timeless. I mean, it still sounds as good now as it did when the records first came out.
Yeah,
the production, what Max Norman brought to it, the whole thing.
Well, Max was such an on cued in with us engineer. Anyway, I digressed.
But let me ask you before I forget, because I know we're jumping around here. But just as while we're in this period, I have to ask you this: what are your hands?
My God!
We're live on the air now. Give us a second. what were your impressions of Randy Rhoads when you met him?
I swear?
Yes.
Fuck me! What a player!
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was in for, and that's why I'll carry on. As I said, what happened was, I said, let's do I Don't Know. And so we did, you know, the thing. And I went, and all I said, Randy just turned around and went, we got ourselves a drummer! And I just looked at Bob and I went, this guy, fuck is he, you know? And Bob was going, yeah, and it was just uncanny. That sound we had just without any rehearsal, then I was getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
And I knew that we had a magic, something. And then when we were in the studio, we were given carte blanche. We were given all the freedom we wanted. No one was there. We were just left by Don and David Arden. Chan wasn't involved in it at that time for the Blizzard of Oz. We said, they came up and said, well, the album's sounding really good. What are we going to call it? And what do we want to call the band? And Bob said, Blizzard of Oz. Great name. Ozzy Osbourne's Blizzard of Oz. He always came up with great ideas, Bob. And they said, okay. So that was done by the by and went on. And then when we came out and finished it, I believe it was Don Arden went over to America and it just took off. He pursued it to the point where this record Mercury said, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Mercury said, we love it, we want it, we'll have it. And it went boom. Just boom. Literally.
But it ended up coming out on Jet Records, which was Don Arden's
label.
Yeah,
but of course, it's like Jerry Bronze Records via Mercury.
Right, Warner. Right.
I don't know the politics of those things, but anyway, it started taking off. And then Don said, right, so you've got to go in and record another one right away now.
Very quickly.
Yeah, you've got to record another one. I want two in the back because you're going to be working so hard. Your ass is not going to be touching the ground. So I said, oh, great. I was loving that. Just feel the popularity and fame come back. And I just went, yeah. So we went in and we started writing. And we wrote this album. And I just said to Bob, we're uncanny. Us three are uncanny. We like each other. We get on so well, and we all listen, and we all have respect. I mean, I get on the piano, and I play a piece, and Randy was playing some part of it, and I was going, and he goes, what's that, Lee? That's an idea I was coming up with for you, a solo part, when you put these solos in one of the songs. He went, I like that. Not only would he play that, he'd play his idea on top of that, and it would go through the roof, surpass it. Those were the things that we did. Nobody held us back. It was no, oh, I don't like that. Right. Oh, I'm not playing that.
Right.
It was just go for it. And you can hear it on the I mean, that's why I believe those albums stand the test of time.
Yeah. Yeah, they really do. They're an amazing. What the four of you guys created on those two records to this day. I mean, needless to say, I talked to Bob about this the other day. Crazy Train is everywhere. I mean, to this day, it's played constantly at every sporting event, everywhere you go. It's literally everywhere, seemingly. And other tracks, I mean, just two iconic records.
Look, the introduction to I did the triplets. To Over the Mountain.
Over the Mountain, yeah.
That was done. So I got a phone call from a friend of mine in Florida saying, that's the drumettes are playing it now in the FA football final. They're playing that beginning.
Yeah, your drum opened.
Yeah, I went, what? To me, that's an honor.
Yeah, that's amazing.
20 drummers going, you know. Yeah, I'll be going, get it on.
How many live shows did you end up doing with that band, you personally?
We did an English tour.
Yeah.
And which was extremely, extremely successful. It was really, really good. We did one, two, three, four, five, six, about eight, I think, from England all the way up to Scotland and then Wales. We didn't do Touch Island, but it was an excellent, excellent band. I mean, it was so hot. And, eight shows. And then we got replaced because basically Sharon was then taking over the idea of the band because David Arden couldn't run us. He found me and Bob too strong, too knowledgeable in our... Well, we've been in the business then.
Right.
In the business, you know, 20 years.
Right.
So we knew everything was going on and what was good and what was bad. So we weren't going to roll over, like, oh, here's your contract, the size of the bloody Bible, you know, Gideon's Bible, but that thick. And I said, no, I don't want a contract. I'm not signing that. It's a load of crap.
Yeah.
And in the end, Sharon came over and started looking after us. And she was a sweetheart to start with. Really, really lovely. And she just got us all together. And she said, right, this is it. We're going to America. I was happy. Chuffed to death. And Ozzy said, yeah, okay. She said, you're going to have to do two shows a night to start with. And Ozzy looked at her and he went, ooh. And he went, pulled to one side. And we went out from the bar, away from the bar, and he just went, I can't do two shows, Lee. I can't do two shows.
What were they talking about, doing like a matinee and a late show?
Two shows, back to back. So literally, you know, from 7:30 to 9, and then from 9:30 to 10:30.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And I've done it. I've done it a few times with UIA just to keep the, you know, to get the popularity, keep going. And it didn't worry me so much, but Ozzy couldn't do his voice. He wouldn't take it. So he said, you got to say, you've got to tell Sharon. Got to tell Sharon I can't do it. So I said, okay, as long as you stand by me, I'll go and be the spokesman. I went to Sharon. I said, Sharon, I'm sorry, love. There's no way Ozzy's going to do it. He won't do it. And I said, it's no point in us doing two shows. If we can't get it across on one show, what's the point of us being there? And she said something like, well, when I say shit, you jump on the shovel. I said, it don't work that way with me, Sharon. And that's when we had our big first argument.
So he dispatched you to tell her.
And then denied you... everything about it.
Oh, my God.
Bless him. But we got our own back when we were walking. We were doing our normal walks just to get out from the studio because it was driving us mad.
Yeah.
And we were walking in the fields. And Bob went to me, whispered, he went, I said, what, nuclear war? And I went, what, nuclear war? And when, now? And Ozzy went, whoa. What? And he panic. And he's coming up to us and what war? What's going on? I said, no, I don't want to tell you. I don't want to frighten you. It may not be true. He was so scared. He was phoning up, trying to get a flight to anywhere.
Because he thought there was a nuclear war.
We just sent the whiskey. Yeah, we set him up rotten so many times.
Oh, my gosh. Listen, I only want to keep you a couple more minutes, but I wanted to. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about all the years and albums you made with Uriah Heep, a band that in the U.S. never quite got, I don't think, as far as you got in England. They certainly had your fans and your tours.
We were bigger in America than England.
Really?
Absolutely.
See,
we were mega in America.
Really?
We had Kiss support us, Foreigner support us. Earth, Wind & Fire supporters.
Really? What year are you talking?
1972, 73, 74.
See, I was too young to have known it then, so I wouldn't have.
We had...
that. So early 70s, what, you're doing arenas in the U.S. with Uriah Heep?
We started the tour supporting Deep Purple, and within 6 months we were doing our own arenas, and we were doing 10,000, 15,000, but everywhere you went, and you know how big it was with radio shows.
Yeah.
And you went into a bus or on tour, you could switch everywhere and you'd hear something.
Easy Living was the biggest song.
That's
here.
All we ever heard. Easy Living was huge.
Yeah.
And it took us right to a level. And we backed it up with a song called Stealing. And it got blitzed by the God Squad because it says, I done the rancher's daughter. And because of that single little verse, they banned it in so many shops that the do-gooders and the religious belt tried to stop it.
Right.
Made us 10 times more popular.
Oh, my God. That's always how it works.
We were bigger and bigger. Because of their alienation, they went, right, yeah. And we were huge. And we were doing major tours. And as I said, we had Foreigner supporters, Earth, Wind & Fire supporters, Rod Stewart, equal billing we had, and Kiss, when they first started, they supported us in Salt Lake City.
You remember.
In the Salt Palace. Yeah, because it was Gene and Paul came in and just said to us, can we use, you know, our back line, effects? And I said, yeah, of course you can. If you're good, you'll kick us ass. Get us off the ground. Yeah, go for it. Bloody hell.
You had no idea what was coming.
No, I didn't. I went, what the? And I just could not believe it. And I just said, me and Mickey went, they're going to go mega. They are now mega. Look at them. What a great idea.
Yeah.
All that makeup, all them boots and everything, the guitars and the fire. I've stayed friendly, although I haven't seen him for, quite 30-odd years. I just got off. I spoke to Gene last week because I was going to come and interview him, chat with him so he could film it. But unfortunately, they're up to their neck in work and he hasn't got the time.
Right, right.
So we're gonna meet in England with him and Paul.
Well, one last thing.
Yes,
you had mentioned during a commercial break, I thought it was fascinating, you had a friendship with John Bonham?
Yeah, I knew John, yeah.
And you had still told a story which I had no idea about that.
Well,
at some
I was
point...
told I was told this story by a roadie worked for John that he chose me, suggested me for the film, and if anything ever happened to him, I don't know where that came about. Why?
There was talk of Zeppelin doing a film about
about
them,
like the Queen thing that's
happened. Biopic, right? Yeah.
So I think in the early days there was going to be a Led Zeppelin jobby, and I was asked. I wasn't asked. I was suggested, and John wanted me very strongly to do the part. But John Paul Jones put it at squash, and he had a lot of power then. John Paul Jones said no. He was very superstitious, and it was squashed completely.
The whole film, the whole thing.
He didn't
time.
Like it, the idea.
And the last thing, Lee, you touched on this. You said you were told by doctors you had a year to live.
Yeah.
You seem, I mean, I don't know what, all the ins and outs of your health situation, but you seem in great spirits, and you seem... You look great to me.
Thank you.
What is the prognosis, and what are you dealing with, and what are you battling?
My cancer's come back at an alarming rate. It's raced through. It's gone. When I first found out I had it, I should have been dead. That's what the consultant.
What type of cancer?
Prostate.
It started with prostate.
My PSA, which is it was 2025. Well, you're usually in an emergency at 200. And I was 2025. I never knew. And they put it down to the fact and the strength of my body and willpower, I pushed it to one side. I didn't know I had cancer. I didn't know I had diabetes. I didn't know I had sleep apnea,
Right.
But I don't waffle in it. I've no time for it. I know it's there because it reminds me of the big spears in my back because it's getting to my bones now. I'm getting bone cancer. But there's a remedy, possible remedy. And when I spoke to my consultant just before I came out here, they went, we're going to put you on this Zelmenida. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. He said, it's very expensive. I said, oh, goody. I'm going to be out with those rich people.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just said to them, don't fuck me about, don't mess me about. How long have I got? And that was a year ago, and now that's been 8 months since they said that. So it's now, if I'm going to be alive after birthday, so it's a win. And I don't intend to pop yet because I've just finished my album called 11 Teen.
You've got a record coming.
Yeah, I've done it. I finally finished it just good before it came out in mixing it. And it's called 11-teen.
Okay.
And the reason it's called 11-teen in my nutty way is because when I was at school, I used to question it to the school maths teacher. I was extremely good at maths in those days. And I said to him, look, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 11, 18, 20. It rolls with the tongue. So what's wrong? Why is it missing? What have these Greeks done to us? And he just used to look at me as if I was nuts. So I
did 11-teen.
11-teen.
Who else is on the record?
Just me and Jack Liberetto, who he used to work with E-Type Boys.
Okay.
And who were Faithless before that, and okay. were quite big in England. And he is a genius. He's up there with Bob, Randy, and with Mick. He's up there with the quality, and Randy. He's incredibly, incredibly talented. And him and me did it between us. He played the guitar and the bass. I did the keyboards, the strings, the drums, vocals, and the harmonies. And
when are you going to put it out?
Well, we're just going to see what happens. We're trying to get a record deal. That's the tough part.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know what it's like with record companies. Yeah. They go, oh, yeah, you got a record. Okay, well, we'll give you a 10p an album, and then we won't do fuck all, will you?
Right.
You know, and I brought a couple over with me, and I'm going to see if I can get some help. Because the thing is now, and in my age, and it is what it is, I'm 72. And I'm only on pension, very little money coming in. So that's why I'm trying to get this record off the ground to fund me, to get me again, so I can come back over to America and do this, what I'm doing now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can't tell you. I mean, it's an honor to meet you, and I'm so glad that this we had a chance to spend some time together today. And when you're ready with the record and you put it out, however you put it out, I'll give you my info, and Ace knows where to get me.
Okay.
And drop me a line, because I'll put the word out for you. I'll do anything I can to let people know how to get it once you have it out there.
I do appreciate that, Eddie. And if any chance there is, I know I've been a bit cheeky now, but what the hell? I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I'm trying to fathom out with Pat a way of get funding, because there's a documentary on me at the moment.
Okay.
And we're on a lay low because finances have run. But I've already done a chat with Ian Pace of Deep Purple. He's in his house. I flew over to Ireland and did it with Joe in Guinness.
With Joe Elliott?
Yeah, the Guinness factory. So him and me are in the Guinness Hall of Fame.
Okay.
We did that. And I was going to meet with Gene Simmons. And I'm going to get Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd. I'm going to meet with him.
Awesome.
Hopefully. So I'm trying to do
Sounds like a great project.
Well, she's this woman, Taylor Goodman, who's a director. She owns London Bridge Films. We chatted away, and she was so in awe of me of what I've got wrong with me. So I want to do a documentary on your life story, because I told her a bit about it, only in passing.
Yeah.
And so I want the world to know. So we're doing a documentary on me, how I started, and unfortunately the funds have dried up. So
is there a page or something where people can go if they want to donate to it?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it's done. I don't know if I can see. Ace is a good friend, but I don't know how it's worked. What do we do? When do we?
I'll find out through, and you guys let me know, and we'll put it out there for you. And I'll put it on my social media and everything for you.
What if I gave you this card of Taylor Goodman? Then
we'll find out. Yeah, I'll connect with Ace. Yeah, we'll get it. I'll help out however I can.
I love you, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Really, it's something, because I want, again, once I know it's starting to kick, I've got a couple of charities I want to donate some of it to.
Right.
And one of them's doggies. Because I'm a dog lover.
Okay.
I've got a dog at home.
Yeah.
I love them. Love them all. And I've also want to donate some money to the charity for the children who are suffering big time.
Mm-hmm.
Like Guy's Hospital, you want to see some of them kids. They're 4 and 5, and they've got worse than I've got.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's unfair. Life's unfair for them.
Yeah.
So I want to do something about that. So if I get it motivated and get it going, You know, the album and the documentary. I want to donate some money to
You're
them.
Not going anywhere, Lee. You got a lot to do, man. You got an album, you got a documentary.
Well, that's, stay
Don't
busy.
Let those doctors tell you anything, man. You got a great spirit about you. I got a feeling next year we're going to be sitting here doing another interview about all these projects.
I love it.
All right.
Eddie, I love it.
All right. Well, God bless you, man. I hope that's the case.
God
all right.
Yourself.
I'm rooting for you all the way. And it's an honor to meet you.
Thank you for some time today. Thank you, sir.
Well, as I said at the top, I really, really enjoyed talking to that guy. And as you can see, an amazing spirit that he has, especially given what he is going through. And as I also said at the top, I spent a lot of time talking to him after that interview throughout the course of the week. Really, really special guy, rooting for him hard to defy the odds and to stick around. And who knows, maybe we get a chance to chat once again. Thanks to Lee Kerslake. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to Katie Irizarry. She's the producer of the Eddie Trunk podcast. Remember, follow me on Twitter at Eddie Trunk, where I am most active. Also, EddieTrunk.com, the official online home with all my appearances on the homepage. Instagram at Eddie Trunk. And there's a fan page as well at Eddie Trunk on Facebook. You guys have yourselves a great week. And I'll see you next Thursday for another all new episode of the Eddie Trunk podcast. As always, free, podcast1.com or iTunes.
Time to get in shape with Ben Greenfield Fitness on Podcast One. Tune into the latest health, fitness, and multi-sport research, non-run-of-the-mill interviews with exercise and medicine professionals, and new cutting-edge content from the top personal trainer and wellness coach in the nation.
You've heard me talk about using infrared light and red light therapy, guys, on your skin, cellulite. I was going to say ladies, but guys have cellulite too.
Download Ben Greenfield Fitness every Wednesday on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.